of the only comic book podcast that is always on to go. I'm one of your hosts, Chance.
It's a comics and nerd culture podcast, and I'm your other host, Cameron.
Hello, Cameron.
Hello. Here we are.
Here we are.
Back again. Back in the saddle again.
Back in the saddle again. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Full week. Busy week. Yeah.
Is this where we announce that we're a right-wing podcast now so no one shuts us down?
Mm-hmm. That's us.
We love the government and...
I love the Constitution, but I don't know what it says. But if I did know what it said, I would vehemently disagree with it.
Stop.
I mean, I love the Constitution.
Cameron, you're gonna get us.
The Declaration of Independence is woke.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I understand the term, yes.
Do you remember when, I forget who it was, tweeted that out line by line, the Declaration of Independence, and it just got like, this was several 4th of July's ago, and it just got so much like commentary on it of like, oh, so you think this is okay? And just like a typical liberals. And it's just like, this is the thing. this is the one. I don't know what to tell you.
This seems like a you problem. There's a fly in here.
I saw that.
I'm going to hate.
Anyway, the word of the day is projection.
So the word of the day, according to Stephen Colbert, who we do not support, is shh.
Okay. Thanks for coming, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for coming to our podcast where we just say we love the government. And we agree with everything they do.
I can't wait to watch a UFC fight on the White House lawn.
Yeah, only the person with the biggest brain and a totally normal skin color could have come up with that.
A very stable genius.
A very stable genius.
Almost so stable. So stable, it's almost like scary.
Okay, so we'll see you all next week. And everyone can just turn off the podcast now.
Okay, they're gone.
Okay, they're all gone. They probably won't notice. Fuck everything that's going on.
What was that? Huh?
I don't know.
The horrors persist, but so do we.
They do.
We remain comic booky.
It's been a bad week in the news. I am not a football guy, but Colin Kaepernick continues to be my favorite one.
Yeah. Did he pay? He's offering to pay for the independent autopsy.
He did pay for it, from what I've read today.
Good.
Like, he's already done it.
Good man. But remember, shut up and play football, unless it's holding a memorial for apparently the greatest person in America.
Yeah, who didn't. I've seen a lot of weird things this week. I'm, for all of you at home, I followed Mr. Kirk for quite a while. There was a time, it was right around like 2016-ish, maybe 2015-ish, when I was hearing a lot of young men on college campuses start talking about like great replacement theory, that like minorities were trying to outbreed white people to replace them, and that we needed to like fight back. And I saw it coming out of like really normal people, and I kind of traced it back to Turning Point USA, even like back then. I don't know if it was called Turning Point USA at the time, I don't remember, but it was definitely Charlie Kirk on college campuses. And I was telling Cameron this, I need to tell you, Charlie Kirk is not a debater. You might think, like, people all over the internet are like, oh, there's so much context to what he says. People are boiling it down, not reading the context. And as Cameron said, often reading the context makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Charlie Kirk had the same playbook the whole like 10-ish years I followed. And we can boil it down to the whole, what was it? Let's do the pilot. Let's do the pilot one, just because that's the one I know the best, where he talked about a black pilot and he would feel bad or he would be scared.
You're worried.
Worried. And you might be thinking like, oh, that there's some context there. But actually, there isn't, because Charlie Kirk has three steps, and all of them are actually about the first step. So he says the first step, and then he softens the blow with like an anecdote, a story, and then he ends that anecdote or story that softens with something that sounds like a statistic. Like, I think in that case, he ends the next part with like, but I don't want to be flying with someone who could have gotten a 60% on their flight test. But that doesn't even make sense. Like, pilots need 80 hours of flight time just to get a private license, and they need hundreds of hours, several instructors to get a license. There's not like a test, and boom, you're a pilot. It doesn't make any sense. But the way Charlie Kirk says it, it sounds like a statistic. But if you actually interrogate the things at the end of the softening step, they never are. They're something that seems maybe plausible, or something that sounds like it has a statistic in it. And then he goes back and he reinforces that first bit with that transitionary statistic. So
interesting.
He does it. He does the same thing every single time. So if you hear an inflammatory Charlie Kirk statement, though, I could do the same thing with the one about guns in schools, all of that. He never is actually arguing. The first thing he says is always what he means. And then he uses this rhetorical sleight of hand to trick you into thinking that that statement is more reasonable than it is. So
you forgot the important fourth step.
What is it?
Profit.
Well, yes, profit. Yes, that is also a thing. He was bought and paid for like a bitch.
Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
No. I will talk about it until the day I'm blue in the face, though.
Yes, you will. Trust me. But no, we're here to talk about comic books and nerd culture.
Yeah, and just tell the truth. That's what we're supposed to do, right, Kirky?
An important thing to do. Tell the truth. Yes. And I'm going to tell the truth right now because I'm the first one up this week. I keep trying to transition. Ooh. And you keep untransitioning us. Stop trying to untransition us, Chief.
I'm going to untransition. I can't. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. But I am going to tell the truth. I had an interesting week in comics. I had three old favorites that I think were all really good and two new kind of whim purchases.
Oh, you have five?
So I have five.
I ended up with two because I got the wrong issue of Captain Plant.
You know, it happens. But two of them were sort of like, oh, that's interesting. Or that catches my eye. This seems like a good starting point. And so I just went with them. And one of them was like, I came away mostly confused. And one of them, I came away mostly delighted. And so that's the one I'm going to bring to you today. And that is Wild West Cowboys of Moo Mesa #1.
I almost picked it up. I really did. I thought about it.
By Matt Hodson and Juan Gedeon. And this was a TV show, right?
Yes. I remember it vaguely. It was kind of a successor to TMNT.
Yes. As our sister podcast, My Brother and Me, would refer to them as abnormals.
Oh, yes. That's true.
Animals with abs. So in the same vein as Ninja Turtles, Street Sharks, Biker Mice from Mars, I suppose. Anything where you have an anthropomorphic animals. I wasn't even super aware of the television show existing.
I've never seen it.
My really only experience with this franchise is I can't remember if I played it or if I just longed to play an arcade game of this at a Godfather's Pizza in Enid, Oklahoma.
I've been to that Godfather's Pizza one time.
Yeah, me too. And they had this game. I don't remember if I played it or not, but I was just like, this is really cool. And so when I saw this book, I was like, I have to get it. And overall, like I said, I was pretty delighted. I was pretty happy. It's a very punny book.
Well, yeah.
It's just nonstop puns. But also just really, you know, every once in a while, you need one for like the furries.
Mm-hmm. I guess so.
And this is the one. It is very interesting just from a character design perspective. Like some characters are like very animal, like all of our main cast. They're very obviously cows, right? Or bulls or whatever. But then sometimes there's like, this is a female cow character who mostly just looks like a person.
Yeah, just has little spots on her face.
And I just don't know how we decide. I guess the males of the species get all the muscles and features.
Just like in real life.
Yeah, you know, we're bigger and stronger, better, because we're a right-wing podcast now.
Harder, better, faster.
But the book opens where our main hero, Moo Montana, is training with his, mentor, I suppose you could say. I'm trying to remember her name. It was, of course, a pun. Mary is her last name. But what was her first name? I thought it was very funny. It's not important. Sheriff Mary, she's a horse girl, literally.
Literally.
But they're, like, chatting. He's talking about coming back to town. Kind of, we get a little rundown of, like, there was a big comet that crashed into the earth and turned all the animals into animal people. And so his, like, mentor shows him up shooting some stuff. And then we see this bighorn sheep as a wagon being chased by some armadillo bandits. The Amore Dillos, they're French armadillo bandits, because of course they are. They look very French.
Oh my, they do.
There they are. But they are attacking. They're trying to take over the wagon the whole time. The goat, the bighorn sheep is like, hey, like H-E-Y, trying to get these guys off my tail. Hey, trying to get help. They crash the wagon and they're like, it's all just hay. He's like, that's what I was trying to say. I only have hay in my wagon. I'm not carrying anything valuable. Hey, I just have hay. He's like fighting them. And then Moo Montana, Mary Quine, that's her name. Mary Quine. They come and they, you know, take the bad guys out. It's real, real fun. But then Mary Quine gets shot. It's very intense right here.
Oof.
And we're like, oh no, this is the dark origin story of Moo Montana. He goes to her and turns out she had the code of the West that was in her like jacket pocket and it took the bullet.
That trope.
Me too. I really do. And so he's like, these are the words she says, these are the words you need to live by, Moo Montana, the code of the West, live it, learn it, love it. Someday it might save your life. And then we are some indeterminate amount of time later, and Moo Montana is considerably buffer and has a new shirt. He's rolling into town, and turns out things are out of control in the town that he comes to. Cowtown is what it's called. The mayor is there, and he has his kind of his deputy. And Mary E. Quine was the sheriff, but she's gone missing along with a lot of other people in town. And you can tell right away the sheriff's a bad guy and his deputy's a bad guy. You know, he's like, there's fewer people because people are going missing. So we have to raise taxes so that we're not missing those people. Instant boos from all the crowd. Some great anthropomorphic vulture and a scorpion. The scorpion has a mitten over his tail.
Well, yeah, he doesn't want to hurt anybody.
Which I just think is really special, very fun. But everyone's really mad at the mayor. And then the deputies, they're acting tough, but they say, we needed to bring in some extra help, so we have a sheriff are coming into town. Marshal, Moo Montana, is coming to help us. And then we find out that, like, the powers that be over the region sent him. The mayor didn't send for him. Even though the mayor's like, we asked for help, you know, he's just lying to the people. But he says, I'm going to settle this my way. I'm going to figure it out. So stay out of my way. Basically, he's going to go find out what's up. It turns out we have ourselves a fight in the saloon.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a real rowdy time. About 10,000 puns are just firing off left and right. We meet kind of some of the other cast of characters. There's a big buffalo man, and he's just kind of like, what's this sheriff even going to do? He can't possibly, just one guy is supposed to solve all of our problems. And then he comes in and, you know, you find the biggest, baddest guy and punch him in the nose. But he just sort of wins him over, by doing that. Actually he doesn't punch him in the nose. I got that backwards. He basically like gives him his gun. He's like, feels heavy, right? The weight of responsibility of caring for a group of people. And so you know that I'm going to do my best. And he's got this guy on his side. And we see some of the other cast of characters that are like being taken in by his words. Things sort of settle down. Suddenly there's a cry for help. And a young boy is being taken by a mechanical horse man. So he's taking him. There's a shootout trying to stop this guy. They try to rescue the kid, but he gets away with the boy. He escapes with the boy, and they're like, "We're gonna catch him!" And they chase after him, and he disappears. And so this kid has been taken, but Moo Montana's on the case. And I thought the art was great. I thought the action was really fun. The writing was very funny, and I just thought it was a good setup for. Mm-hmm. The start of the book with the Moo Mesa, the Cowboys, the Moo Mesa.
You sound like you really enjoyed it.
I did. It was a fun time.
I will do my best book, and then you can do all of yours, and I'll just finish.
Okay.
Does that sound okay?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Let me readjust here. All right. my best book, pretty obviously, I feel like. I don't know, as good as it was, I don't know that anything could have competed with it, is Ghost Pepper, number 3, by Ludo Lalabi and Adriano Lucas. Did you read this?
I did not, because I forgot to even read number 2.
Number 2 is a big setup book. We kind of learn. We have a lot of people telling us what's going on. This book is much more. We have two kind of three scenes going on, and it's a lot more action. Not in the sense that there's a lot of fighting, because there really isn't, but a lot more is happening to the characters instead of talking about the backstory of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that. The big food truck from the very beginning that hated the Ghost Pepper food truck has been hunting them down. They were there at the very end of the issue 2, and he gets on a microphone. He starts blabbing about how the only way you could make better food than me is by cheating. You must be doing something crazy. Like, it must be a lie. No one can make better food than me. He's kind of dear leader coded, in my opinion. He's like, I tried all the recipes, all of them, all the spices, all of them, all the ingredients, all of them. And this just seemed very, very, you know what, Trumpian to me.
A very stable chef.
Yeah. And then his driver's like, hey, you know, she's getting away as you're screaming, right? So he's like after her, and they're like, our thing is so much bigger. Like, we'll never catch him. He's like, that's why I hired you. And the bigger guy that was on that thing is like, no, like, I don't want to do this. And he's like, let's see if you're worth what I paid for you. And he's like, no, don't do it. And then he, like, pulls a ripcord on his friend's back, the chef does, and throws him off of the food truck. And at first he bounces and kind of thuds in kind of a funny, cartoony way. And then he starts like running like a leopard, which is very funny because he's a very like big man.
Uh-huh.
there it is.
He's just doing it.
He starts running like a leopard, and like these pistons come out of his back, and he starts growling, and Ash is like, ah, a grunt soldier. And then he jumps at the food truck and knocks it over with his piston back. That gives the other food truck time to catch up. Then we cut to the woman who was introduced at the end of the last one when they were talking about the eclipse, which I guess, from what I can understand, they were a group of elite soldiers, probably superhuman in some way, and they fought the Cinder, even though Ash is the one who defeated the Cinder. They were all, like, kind of Ash level, but Ash was the strongest one. But then something happened. We're not sure yet. And Batar, the leader that they're all worshiping, Batar took credit for Ash's victory and was hoping Ash was gone forever. And the Eclipse have just been off being bored. So this woman comes in and she's got the fin head, which is what they call kind of their security drones for the first book. And like this tech genius dude like hacks its brain and they see Ash and she's like, so it really is Ash. And the other guy's like, yeah, looks like Batar's charade is in jeopardy. And she's like, hey, we have peace and going after Ash is something to do. And he like gets down into this gaming chair. You see it. He gets down. He's like, I got an imagination. I'm not bored. And she's like, so you're not going to fight Ash for Batar? And he's like, I'm not doing anything for Batar. Like, I'm not going after the most powerful Eclipse for him. So she kind of shows the end of the battle, though, where the robot took over Ash's body or whatever because he was going a little berserk. And she's like, I have a plan. I know how to get to Ash. So we don't really know what that means. Then we get Batar is in a parade, and people are giving him stuff, and he's promising to give them more in return eventually. And I guess he has prosthetic limbs that are kind of going haywire. I don't really know what's up with that. But then he saves this kid from a security bot, that shouldn't be attacking that kid anyway. And the procession gets really far away from him, and he's like, oh, no, I'm alone. And he's out there. Oh, no, don't leave me alone. And he gets really scared, and when he gets back, he calls off the parade. And then there's this other figure who's very scary looking and has his own kind of scarier version of Ash's robot that also talks in the same red bubbles. And he's like, ooh, only one thing can make him that scared. Ash really is back. That's how I imagine he talks. And he says, nothing makes you feel more alive when the world is about to burn. So he's kind of a jokerish figure, kind of a not really on anyone's side kind of crazy figure. And like I said, he's got the same robot thing, except his is scarier, that Ash does. And then we go back to the truck. The chef orders the grunt to destroy the truck and everyone in it. But then Ash jumps out of the truck very epically, as he is wont to do, and faces down the grunt coming at the truck. And he's like, no, no, what is he doing here? That's the end of the Ash issue. But it's really good movement. I'm really loving the characters. Even the bad guys are being painted as like kind of delightfully pathetic.
You love to see it.
Which I'm here for, yeah. So yeah, this series so far, I'm really loving it. I'm finding it pretty terrific. Yeah, that's my best book.
All right, well, I'm going to run through my book blurbs then. I've got four, and then you'll do one. This next one was the one I picked it up because it's like a new number one in an older series that I was like, will be a interesting starting point. It wasn't what I thought, but I did some research, and apparently that's what it always has been to an extent. So I was the one who was wrong, not the series being weird, though it is weird. But I picked up the XO Manowar.
Why would you do that?
I've always seen it and been like, that looks sort of space opera-y. It's not.
No.
Not at all. It was interesting. It was more Mad Max-y than I was expecting. Sort of like a post-apocalyptic Earth, but our main character is a 5th century Visigoth who got abducted by aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And then, warped at light speed and the time dilation. It'd been just a little bit of time for him, but he was back on Earth, centuries and centuries later.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got an alien power suit. I don't know.
Yeah, people should really, really should find the original Valiant runs because they were legitimately incredible. Since the original run, my time working at Hastings alone, they tried to relaunch Valiant 3 times. People have been waiting for the original Valiant magic to strike again since, man, at least 2012. And it is just not. The original ones were everything these reboots can't be. They were imaginative. They were new. They were exciting. It was kind of very much... I had the same feeling when I was getting back into comics and I was discovering Ghost Machine. Mm-hmm. Like new ideas, great creators, all of this. But yeah, I can't with any of these Valiant cash grabs.
So yeah, so that was the first one. I really didn't know anything about it, but I'd always seen it and been like, oh, this is a start. I don't think I'm going to really continue. It feels kind of, I mean, not to say that it's a bad thing for like an 80s, 90s vibe. You know, it's just like hyper masculine, super muscles. People aren't shaped like that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? My next one could have been my best book, but it has been so many times. Batman and Robin Year One, number 11, the penultimate issue.
When I saw it at the comic book store, I was like, there's Cameron's best book.
Yes, you would have been right normally, but the Cowboys had something else to say. It was still really, really great thing. Everything's come to a head. We just have an interesting reversal where I feel like in the rest of the book, it's Robin trying to go it alone and realizing that he needs Batman. And this time we have the reversal where Batman's trying to do it alone and realizing that he needs Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels like he's a failure as a father towards Robin, and he lets that hold him back from what he needs to do. And I just thought that was nice. After that, Absolute Flash number 7. Things are really picking up here. We have the Weather Wizard in this one.
Is he an agent as well?
It seems like they were experimenting on people because we also, you know, had Heat Wave a couple issues back.
Mm-hmm.
They're experimenting on people. And I think a lot of those people have escaped and are wreaking havoc, not necessarily by choice, but just by the nature of they've been abused and traumatized. And so they're just kind of like acting out because they have no other means of recourse. But then the Rogues, as we know as the Rogues, are like tracking Wally West down. But in the end, in a nice reversal, Wally West and the Rogues team up.
Ooh, I always love it when Wally West and the Rogues team up.
He's just like, we're not going back either. So he's like, how about a kid want to go rogue? And Wally West smiles. And I was just like, oh, hell yeah, this is it. So I'm looking forward to that. And the final one, Uncanny X-Men 21.
That's a cover.
It is a cover. It's the because they're doing their Age of Revelation, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so Uncanny X-Men's taking a little bit of a break. And they're going to be releasing Unbreakable X-Men, which I may or may not read. I don't know. I've just got so much. But this one was fun because, like I said, it kind of oversold what it was because there's just a lot of setup. And it's like, they're going to be at a comic convention trying to fight some bad guys. And they do, but it's like the back half of the issue. There is a very sweet moment when a cosplayer who's dressed up as Phoenix, but with like Argentina, iconography instead, like asks Logan for a picture and he's just like smitten. It was very funny just to see the character like that. But again, I just think it was really very well written episode. I think the work that Gail Simone has done with the Outliers, which are the new mutants, just all of them are great, especially our girl Calico. She's not in this one too much, but we were focused on...
Where's your Solos book?
Yeah, I need a solo Calico book immediately. This one's focused on Ransom, who's pretty cool.
But not Calico.
He's not Calico. He's no Calico. But who is?
Calico.
Yeah, she's the only one that is. Anyway.
Sorry if you just heard my son flush a toilet.
I didn't.
Oh, okay.
You mentioned it, so...
You laughed right when it happened, so I was like, he heard.
I was just laughing about Calico having Green Lantern horse powers.
Yeah. Either the horse is the Green Lantern ring that makes fire constructs, or the girl is the Green Lantern ring that makes fire constructs.
Yeah, she might be, and the horse is controlling her. Either way, she's on the logo for our podcast.
Yeah, we are all in on Calico.
Anyway, what's your last book, Chance?
My last book I grabbed, I grabbed the wrong issue of Captain Planet, which I still know how I did because I went on Wednesday when they have the new issue set up. So maybe there was like an old issue on top of the new ones because I looked and the new ones came out last week. It should have been there. I'm just not sure how I grabbed the old.
It's happened to me before. Sometimes they get like second printings at the same time.
But normally they're just not on top of one another. I don't know.
Yeah, that is unusual. I bet somebody grabbed one and put it back or something.
Well, and there were lots of variants, so that could have confused me.
They always confuse me. I've purchased the wrong one before, but I went and said, I purchased the wrong one. Mm-hmm. And I switched it out, and he says yes.
That's what I'm intending to do.
Because he's a nice man.
On Wednesday. All right. Well, but I also grabbed The Expanse Little Death by Wes Chatham and Andy Diggle, with art by Francesco Pisa.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I really love the first two Expanse books. I have never engaged with the show.
I hear the show's very good.
Yeah, I have too. I'm not against it. I've not gone there. So yeah, I've read the first two. I am not sure where this takes place. Apparently a lot happens in The Expanse.
Yeah, it seems like it goes some places. There's a lot of books.
I really love the first two. It's not that I don't want to read more. I just never have. But yeah, so I love the first two books. This one confused me a little bit because of all the character relationships were different than I thought maybe they should be. Just because like it follows James Holden's crew, but it follows Amos, who is on James Holden's crew. I just didn't know his character had this kind of depth. And I'm wondering in
the last 17 books.
What?
I said maybe he gets that depth in the last 17 books.
Yeah, that's what.
Or however many there are. Are there 9?
I don't know. I want to say 12 for some reason, but I'm not sure. I have them all. I've just only read the first two.
I think it's 9. Looks like 9.
Okay. I was a little confused, but when I just pretended like I didn't know who all the characters were and this was a new world to me, I enjoyed it a lot. You don't need to know anything about The Expanse to read this book, is kind of my whole point. I was confused, but then when I just let go and was like, it's all new to me, I understood much better. I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm just interested to see where it goes.
Maybe I'm currently rereading all of the Dresden Files books.
Mm-hmm.
You know this already about me. I'm on book 9. Maybe when I'm done with those, maybe I'll go back to The Expanse.
Yeah, I'm going to have to read the first two again. I remember.
I bet they have the audiobooks on Libby, which is how I would want to do it.
Mm-hmm. There's some really cool other audiobook sites I've been learning about recently.
I do like Hoopla, which is also just through the library.
Yeah, but Hoopla is the one that like borrows it from anywhere in the country, right?
Maybe there. I know there's no wait list on it.
Yeah, I think so. I think
Hoopla's their selection is more limited though
than the libraries, because theirs is pretty. Our libraries is pretty limited. Well, for what I read.
Yeah, same. In some cases, yes, it is.
I listened to the first two Expanse books, so I'm a fan.
I really like the first one. I don't know why I didn't keep going. I own the second one also, but I never read it.
It took me a while to get into the second one because
just the more POV characters.
Oh yeah, I've told you this before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it just there were so many more POV characters. It was like I was prepared for like 2 or 3, and then once I got to like 6, I was like, whoa. This is too much.
Yeah.
But I ended up enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, the first one where it's like the captain and the detective.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is
got the girl a little bit.
This is like a really good balance.
between these two. But I do enjoy the second one once I got into it. It just took me a while to get it.
That makes sense. Well, okay. There we go. There's all the books that we read.
It was a nice talk on The Expanse. Have you seen the show? Should we watch it? Let us know.
Please do. Please do. But we'll cut to a commercial break, to a commercial that, yes, exists.
No.
Because we make GOP money now.
We make GOP money. Guns. Guns.
This is an aside. We had our state representative for the area that my school is in come and talk to my model legislative clubs this Friday. And in particular with the eighth grade, because they were like, in Model Edge, they write their own bills, and like we go to the Capitol and they present them to other students, and like they vote on them, and it's like engaging in the government process in that way. But he was coming and like hearing their ideas, and they were talking something about guns, and in eighth grade they're talking, you know, about Declaration of Independence, natural rights, John Locke, and all of that, and they were like, you know, our natural rights, life, liberty, gun. America.
Liberty, gun, America.
Life, liberty, and gun. So that was your commercial. We're back from commercial. And we got a doozy. We got a big
guns today,
which are good, which are bad. They're all good. That's the trick. All the guns are good. It's Borderlands 4, baby. Just shooting all the time.
Did that game come out?
It did. I hear it's really good. Or not really good. I hear it's good. I enjoy them for what they are, not for what they might be. So I always have a good time.
Yeah, I played the first one a little bit, I think, with you.
Yes, I remember. I'm playing it right now just because I'd never beaten it. And so I'm playing it and having fun.
Okay. So many games.
Yeah, too many games. I've been in like a this is preamble to what we're going to be talking about. I feel like I've been in sort of a lull because I like finished Trails Through Daybreak. I finished Bravely Default. And it's like my birthday is the day this episode comes out. And it's like,
happy birthday.
Hey, babe, Trails Through Daybreak 2 is on sale right now on the eShop. Can I just get it for my birthday? And she's like, yes, but you can't play it until your birthday. And then like Trails in the Sky came out on Friday. But I'm like, but my birthday's coming. And I've had like, it's on my list. And so I'm like, can't play that. Borderlands 4, can't play that. Final Fantasy Tactics Remake, can't play that because it's not out yet. I'm just been in this like weird holding pattern that when we get to one more thing, I'm going to talk about something. Oh, just okay. A little teaser. I don't know why I'm saying any of this at this point. Borderlands.
You said it was a preamble.
Yes, it's a bad preamble.
it's a bad preamble, man. There's a Boy Meets World reference for all of you.
That have stuck with us thus far. That have stuck with us thus far.
Yeah.
They're used to this. They're used to my brain not working. And it's because we talked about guns and I mentioned Borderlands. And then I started just talking about it. Someday.
Our B segment.
It has nothing to do with video games.
No, it has nothing to do with video games. Our B segment, a little preamble for it. An actual preamble. I have been getting a lot of social media videos lately of a guy walking around a college campus asking everyone like what their favorite song is, and then he plays that song for the next person, and then they rate the song, and then they tell him what their favorite song is.
Mm-hmm. Love it. I love a conception.
Yeah He's just like, what's your favorite song? And then he plays it for the next person, and they give it a rating out of 10. And then I've noticed a few things through that. And I also saw a TikTok video of a guy just saying, like, here are my favorite 10 songs of the last, or no, my favorite number one hit songs ever. And his number 10 was still haven't found what I've been looking for, which, just so you know, is in my list. It's the coldest of coldest takes. But I went into the comments to see what other people would say was their top 10. And like the predominant comment was, the first one is U2. I was already checked out. U2, come on. And I was like, what is happening?
I wonder if a giant because you brought this up to me before, this U2 thing specifically.
Yes.
I wonder if there was a turn on U2 after Apple forced everyone to have their album on their phone.
That is my current theory, is that the U2, the sound of U2 became like default.
Uh-huh.
Like, because they forced that album onto people's phones.
Yeah, I tell all those haters what they need to do is they need to watch Sing 2 and tell me that they don't get a tear in their eye when they sing Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For at the end.
I didn't even know that was in Sing 2. Now I kind of want to see Sing 2.
Bono's in it. It's Bono.
It's Bono himself?
Yeah, it's Bono. Bono's the lion.
Mm-hmm. Didn't even know. But
because you've been sleeping on Sing 2.
I've been sleeping on Sing 2.
And probably Sing 1 if I know anything about you.
No, I've seen Sing 1.
Okay.
Sing 2's I'm bad. Still standing. I love that part when his dad is watching the video.
Uh-huh, yeah, it makes me cry.
Yeah.
My boy, he breaks out of jail to go give his son a hug.
Yeah.
Oh,
I can tell him. He's not disappointed in him. Uh-huh. But through this, I've actually found some things. One, Vienna by Billy Joel is huge right now. Like, I feel like the number one song in these videos that kids say, like college students say, is Vienna by Billy Joel. Do you know that song?
No, but I do know that college students are dumb.
You do fine.
See the beginning of this episode for evidence of why college students are dumb.
Well, yeah, that's true. Didn't know that. Fleetwood Mac is huge with this generation. Like,
yeah, Fleetwood Mac is awesome. So
huge. Fleetwood Mac is awesome. I have nothing against Fleetwood Mac, but I feel like what Journey became for us when we were in college, like for like our generation, not necessarily you and me, even though I love Journey.
Uh-huh. I mean, I love Journey too.
But I feel like that is what Fleetwood Mac kind of is for this generation.
Curious. Interesting.
Like, I don't know. It just, they're huge. Everyone's got a different favorite Fleetwood Mac song.
The Chain is the right answer.
What?
The Chain.
I don't think I even know that one.
You don't know The Chain, Chance?
It's not ringing a bell.
I'm disappointed in you. Write it down and go listen to it right after this.
The Chain. Got it. I do love Fleetwood Mac, so.
It's on Rumors.
I don't listen to them like, as an album band.
You disgust me. It was the 70s. That's how you did it.
I know. I should. In fact, so just so everyone knows, because of this, I wanted Cameron and I to make a list of our top five favorite songs and talk about it. But I do have two honorable mentions.
I have three honorable mentions.
Well, let me finish.
I have better honorable mentions than you.
I have two honorable mentions that are artists that I love as album artists, but not as none of them. They don't have one song that appears in my top five. And then I have three songs as honorable mentions.
Okay.
Fine. So I kind of have five, but yeah, so that's what we're going to do. And we would love for you to shoot us a blue sky.
Bsky.social.
Yeah, exactly. And tell us your favorite songs of all time. If you know why Vienna from Billy Joel is so big, love Billy Joel. I'm a really big Only the Good Die Young fan and Piano Man. I think they're both great songs. Don't know where the Vienna love's coming from. I feel like it has to be a meme with the amount of kids who say that their favorite song is Vienna.
It's probably there's like a TikTok cause.
If there is, I have missed it. But yeah. So anyway, but yeah, we would love for you to shoot it to us. Cameron, do you want to do your honorable mentions? Then I'll do mine.
Yeah. Give me one second. Is because don't give me the AI answers. I don't know. I was looking to see why Vienna was so popular, and Google wanted to AI me. My honorable mentions. I have three of them. First up is Little Black Submarines by the Black Keys. Yeah.
Black Keys. I didn't even go Black Keys. I should have.
The Black Keys is one of my favorite bands of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And Little Black Submarines is my favorite song by them. It just has it all, especially coming right after Gold on the Ceiling. I just feel like that's a perfect two song back to back.
I completely agree.
Do you want me to do all of them?
Yeah. Just do your honorable mention.
Next up was We Were Rock and Roll by Janelle Monáe.
Yeah.
You familiar?
I've heard it. Yeah. It's a good song.
It is very good. And the final one, this is a as I was thinking about it, it doesn't really fit in the normal oeuvre of the songs I usually listen to. I don't listen to it a lot because I feel like it's an undertaking, but it's Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin. It's an orchestra piece.
Oh, okay.
I remember first hearing it when I went and saw Fantasia 2000 in the theater. And so I've been obsessed with it for like 25 years. I think it's a phenomenal piece of music. Absolutely insane clarinet at the beginning. I almost had another more classical, quote unquote, piece of music that I was going to listen, but it just didn't quite make the cut.
Mm-hmm. But just tell us what it is.
The Lark Ascending by Vaughan Williams.
Ooh.
It's really very good. Absolutely beautiful violin. Paints the picture of, you know, I don't know if it's music per se or joy or just like something like literally a bird, a lark that's like lifts us up in the midst of sadness and hardship, and not by being cheerful, but by being beautiful and lovely and calling our hearts to enjoy something like that as well. I listened to it today. It lost out to Rhapsody in Blue, though, as just an honorable mention.
Love it. I have always loved Vivaldi's Four Seasons, and mostly because I was introduced to it through Boy Meets World.
You close your eyes, you can actually see spring.
It's true. I've always been able to. I didn't even think classical when I went through this. I just went like, if I was going to turn on Spotify in my kitchen, what am I picking?
Makes sense.
That was kind of my I go through phases, I think, where that question is different. But I was trying to be like, if I'm just in no phase, what am I picking? My honorable mentions. My first honorable mention is Exile by Taylor Swift. This is not really an honorable mention saying like it's one of my favorite songs of all time. Taylor Swift is an album artist to me.
Mm-hmm.
There's not like one song that's going to be in my top five, but she's got several in my top 100.
That's a good one too.
It's funny because they're doing a total Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds impression. Bon Iver is, and my next band is Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. I'm using Red Right Hand as my example song. They're an album band to me. I just can't pick one song.
I can, and maybe I will later.
I love There She Goes My Beautiful World. I love White Horses. I love I'm blanking on the name.
Sing us a bit.
It's got tree in the title. Let me Google it so I don't have to just sit here and fumble for it. Skeleton Tree.
Skeleton Tree. Spooky.
Yeah, love all those songs. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds is my favorite band of all time, but I couldn't pick one song to put on my top five favorite songs of all time.
Gotcha. Were those your two album artists?
Yeah, those are my two album artists, is Taylor Swift and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. My three songs, each for a very different reason, that just missed the cut. Johnny Be Good is the song that got me into music. My parents listened to pretty much nothing but Reba McEntire and the Gaithers growing up, and I thought music was just not my thing.
I guess music is bad.
Yes, it is. I heard Johnny Be Good for the first time watching Back to the Future, and I was like, what's happening? It really was a transcendent experience I will never forget.
It's a little too early for you, but your kids are going to love it.
Exactly. And a white guy created Chuck Berry's favorite song. Just always remember that. My other one, best song of the 2010s, in my opinion, Uptown Funk. Just missing out on my favorites. Was it a little overplayed at the time? Yes. Is it still amazing? Also, yes.
Two things are true.
And then probably my second favorite just pure pop song of all time, my last honorable mention, is Run Away With Me by Carly Rae Jepsen.
That's a good one.
I go back to it all the time when I just like want pure pop music. And it makes my heart soar.
Mm-hmm. It's all rise.
It really kind of is all rise. All right. And those are my honorable mentions.
All right. So are we going to just go back and forth?
Sure. Yeah.
Are yours in order?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
Mine aren't.
Okay.
So I'm just going to...
It is in order right now. That's something we should preface. All of this is right now. Some music taste is subjective. Like I said, I go into phases where I'm loving other things. Just Missing the Cut, because I just got out of a big Rat Pack phase, was Volare by D. Martin. I guess add that to the honorable mentions, but... So that would have been in here probably 2 weeks ago, and it's just not now.
Sorry, Dean. You're not making it. Okay, well, I'll just start at the top of what I wrote down.
Okay.
So I did write down There She Goes, My Beautiful World by Nick.
It's a great song.
It's really very good. Mm-hmm. I really like that whole album, mm-hmm. Abattoir Blues / The Lyre of Orpheus.
It's my favorite Nick Cave album.
Me too. It's very, 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 very good. Start to finish. Mm-hmm. But that song in particular, I just feel like musically it's doing a lot, sort of that almost like gospel-y kind of intensity, mm-hmm. that I feel like I grew up with, but clearly not the same messaging that you mm-hmm. would probably get in a song like that. But I especially the line, this is the killer line from the song that's always stuck out to me, is in sort of the third verse. Where he's like, so if you got a trumpet, get on your feet, brother, and blow it. If you got a field that don't yield, get up now and hoe it. I look at you, you look at me, and deep in our hearts, babe, we know it, that you weren't much of a muse, but baby, I weren't much of a poet. And I just love that, just that whole verse.
It's a great line.
You weren't much of a muse, but I weren't much of a poet.
Yeah. And yeah, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, my favorite band of all time.
I'm wearing this shirt right now for this reason.
You are. You're wearing the official shirt. This
morning after you texted me that.
If you are kind of a guy who likes to see the villains win, listen to Murder Ballads. If you want to go on a journey, Lyre of Orpheus. I'm blanking on the first half of the name. It's fine.
Abattoir Blues.
Abattoir Blues. Thank you. Lyre of Orpheus.
If you're real sad, listen to...
Ghost Teen.
It's just real sad.
It's real sad, but it is perfect. It is perfect. I love Ghost Teen. And if you really want to like the gospel influence, his newest one, Wild God. I was wearing the shirt yesterday. Not the official one, the one I made for when I saw the concert.
I made my own t-shirt.
I did make my own. I don't know really how to explain my number five. It's The Pretender by the Foo Fighters.
I do like that one.
Do we have any need to explain why that is such a great song?
It's because the drums go...
That's why. It's true. I really like the shift between the first verse and the first chorus. Mm-hmm. I think it is a really musically interesting choice.
Part of why I like Little Black Submarines.
Yeah. I can see that. I can see the parallel. But yeah, I am not a huge Nirvana fan. I have never actually enjoyed Nirvana. But when they became the Foo Fighters, I love them. So I guess I will keep my name as Kurt Cobain's biggest hater. I don't hate Kurt Cobain.
I mean, that's not what you said.
But I do think the Foo Fighters are a better band without him. And The Pretender is just, it goes, it's like, it eases you in, and then it goes so hard. I love it.
Yeah, it's really good. Okay, I wrote that down. I got a whole page of notes. My next one, is it my turn?
Mm-hmm.
This is another one that I've just really enjoyed for a very long time. A friend of mine, he got really into like Napster and LimeWire. And he would just make me mix CDs of just all sorts of random things. And this was one of the songs that he put on there. And I just feel like I instantly fell in love with it. And it stuck with me. So again, for like 20 plus years, probably at this point. And that is the song Funeral for a Friend / Love Lies Bleeding by Elton John.
Oh, yeah. It's a good Elton John pick.
It really is. It's another long song. It's like mm-hmm. 11 minutes long. Sometimes I really get down with an 11-minute long song. But it's really like two songs. Where we have the first half, Funeral for a Friend, which is like, it does feel very funerally, but also like electronic big organs and like electronic everything that just sounds really cool. That I'm sure if you were in the 70s and seeing Elton John, it's like this is when everyone does their drugs. I mean, you would never do that, right? This is a right-wing podcast. We would never do drugs.
Yeah, drugs are bad.
Drugs are bad, unless you're Elon Musk, and then they're good.
Yeah, I there's a point in which drugs are good. I don't know when.
And then it just cuts to the second half of the song, Love Lies Bleeding, and it's like this incredibly just moving, wonderful piece of music that's like a breakup song, more or less. But I mean, Elton John's just doing his Elton Johniest the whole time, and it's just so fun. This summer, my father-in-law, he loves 70s music, just like loves it. And so usually when we're at the lake, he just has his iPad hooked up to a speaker, and he'll just play like his playlist or different 70s music. But then sometimes he likes to play what he calls pick 'em, and we just go in a circle, and everyone will pick a different song, and we'll just play it and listen to it. So it's not really a game. It's just picking the music. We just call it, let's play pick 'em. And I picked this one, and neither of my in-laws had heard it before, but they both really enjoyed it.
You're a fun guy at the lake, funeral for a friend.
Yes. I was like, this sounds like it wouldn't be that good, but it's a phenomenal.
It's a great song. Yeah, I completely agree.
It's from Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. So you know it's going to be good. Your turn.
Okay, my number four, in my opinion, probably the best song from the 90s, just edging out The Pretender, a song that somehow Cameron missed for most of his life, and then I mocked him for it when I learned that, Return of the Mac.
I knew it was coming.
I love Return of the Mac. I've talked about it on this podcast a few times, but there are just certain songs that are a vibe. Mark Morrison. I didn't say it's artist. There are certain songs that are just like a vibe, or like when you sing them, you get to like embody a piece of the artist's aura. I think Uptown Funk's that way. You feel cool when you sing it. And I think Return of the Mac, being the song that it is, when you really listen to the lyrics, it's kind of funny that it makes you feel cool when it's about someone who's like very uncool.
See, so you can relate.
Yes.
I don't mean you specifically. I mean, general you.
Yes. But yeah, Return of the Mac. It's hype. It's just a perfect late 90s hip hop song.
It is good. I'm still going to keep things back in the day. I believe this is from the 70s. Surely it is.
Both of mine have been from the 90s. That's kind of weird.
That is kind of weird. Yeah, this is also from the 70s. And it is obviously not just in my opinion, but in many people's opinion, one of the best songs ever. And that is September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. It is the feel good, have a good time song is September by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
If you want to get the party pumping, you play September.
And I mean, we're almost there. I think it's tomorrow when we're listening. Tomorrow, September. Tomorrow.
I will always relate this song to Demi Adejuyibe.
Yes, as you should. If you don't know what we're talking about, you just need to look him up and watch.
I can't spell it for you, but Demi,
D-E-M-I. Adejuyibe, just like it sounds. I feel silly that we would have to spell that out for you. But he has a series of videos every year on September 21st that he would release. And they just got more and more extravagant. Also, I believe it was last year, friend of the show, what's his name? Strong Songs, Triple Click.
Oh, not Jason Schreier.
No, not Maddie Myers. And I'm Kirk Hamilton.
Kirk Hamilton.
I said, and I'm Kirk Hamilton. Kirk Hamilton on Strong Songs did a podcast about this song specifically, September. And I just thought it was very interesting, just like breaking down musically what's going on. And I feel like he had a really lovely sort of outro written just about the way music can make you feel. And it can make something as simple as like dancing on a night in September feel like the biggest moment in the universe. And I think that's very sweet. And it's very nice. So I would recommend for further listening, not just this song, but that podcast about this song.
Yeah. I'd love to listen to that. I've never heard of it. All right. I just looked it up because I was curious. My last two were from the 90s, and my next two are both from 1987.
The same year?
Uh-huh. Didn't even know. In my opinion, the greatest pop song ever written is Bad by Michael Jackson. I love Bad by Michael Jackson. I know that the album Bad has kind of a bad rap. Huh?
I laughed.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even mean to do that. It came out right after Thriller, which was like the blockbuster of all blockbuster albums. But I think the album Bad is better than anything on Thriller. And I think the song Bad is better than any song. Maybe not as like memeable, but I feel like it just embodies everything. Video of
him eating popcorn in Bad.
You know, I don't know that I've ever seen the video of Bad, to be honest with you. I don't watch a lot of music videos.
I really don't either.
I pop in earbuds and listen. I think Bad encompasses everything that is good about pop music and that was great about Michael Jackson. Again, I think just like Return of the Mac, it makes you feel very cool to sing it. I think it's musically very interesting. It's got these like beats that you just kind of want to pose to. I just love it. I love it. I'm trying to think of words, but I just love
it. It's hard to think of words sometimes.
It is, especially on a podcast.
Yeah. I mean, we've only been doing this for 5 years.
But yeah, I can't imagine there will ever be a pop song as perfect as Bad.
We'll see. I don't know. I was about to say my next two, but they're not the same genre.
Mm-hmm.
So is it my turn again?
Yeah.
We're taking things international with this next one. And of the songs that are on my list, this is the one that I've learned of the most recent, but it is not the newest song. And that is the song Mayonaka no Door or Stay With Me by Miki Matsubara.
Oh, love it.
Are you familiar?
No.
No? It was extremely popular in its time, 1980s when it came out. I think it exemplifies the genre of Japanese city pop, which is very interesting because it's Japanese, called Japanese city pop, but the city that they're trying to capture the essence of is Los Angeles. And it's just like very like big, the sound. It's just the music of the song is very catchy and very infectious. I would say it's the song that it's most similar to of the songs that I've listed is We Were Rock and Roll. Like I was kind of, those two were vying for the spot because I think musically they fill a very similar niche. Mm-hmm. There's like very nice bass line. There's a saxophone. It's just got everything that you would ever want. But then the lyrics, I mean, they're all in Japanese, but if you translate them, it's like the saddest breakup song you've ever heard. And she's just like begging this person, like, don't leave. I'm standing at your door begging you not to go. Will you stay with me? And it's like,
the vibe it gives off.
No, it doesn't give that vibe at all. The music and the lyrics do not match. But it is just a wonderful, wonderful song. Also listen to it today in preparation for this. And you will be boogieing through your tears.
Boogieing through your tears.
Yes, that was Stay With Me. It's just the English name by Miki Matsubara.
Miki Matsubara.
Yep.
I love it.
It's great.
I'm much more basic. My number two is Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For by U2.
Irrelevant. Don't need the rest of the list.
Here's the thing. The idea of U2 being the default, like you talked about with that album, which I tweeted something very similar today, or Blue Skied.
Skeeted?
I just don't love that.
It doesn't sound nice.
I don't know. I'm not going to brainstorm better Blue Sky terms right now. But yes, I... The idea of U2 as like a default sound kind of sort of makes sense to me, because I feel like that's hyperbole, but I'm going to be hyperbolic right now. I feel like every male trying to sound sincere song has been trying to be, still haven't found what I've been looking for since that song came out. It is moving. It is inspirational. It is a slow jam. I feel like it makes you a better person when you sing it. I feel like Bono does a really good job of like belting without being a belter in that song.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't like try to force it like a Lewis Capaldi might.
Or a what's his name? Chance, why can't I find you over on Blue Sky right now?
I don't know.
It's like, I didn't see. What is your name?
I don't know. We interrupt this for a Blue Sky. C.W. Meyer?
Maybe that's why. There you are. I don't know why I couldn't find you. Yep, that's literally what you said. You said what I said. We said the same thing.
But yeah. I just feel like every song has been trying to do what this song perfected. And mm-hmm. can't do it as well. Are there good male ballads out there, since still haven't found what I'm looking for? Yes, of course there are. Do I think any of them are better than still haven't found what I've been looking for? No. No, I do not.
No, you don't.
You wouldn't have your Ordinary with Alex Warren polluting the airwaves if you didn't have still haven't found what I've been looking for to bless them.
They walked so that they could crawl.
Have you heard that song?
Yeah, it's pretty boring.
It is the most white bread song I've ever heard in my life. Why are people listening to it?
It's hard to say.
But your last one?
My last one is another one that I've been a big fan of for over 20 years. There's a bit of a story. I don't know where it came from, but one time I found a pack, like a CD case with like CDs in it under my bed. I don't know where it came from. I don't know who it belonged to.
Were you playing Monster Hunter 2?
I was not. To this day, I do not know where this came from. It did not belong to me. It did not belong to any of my friends. It did not belong to my parents. There was just suddenly a case of CDs under my bed. And inside of it was a little album called Under the Table and Dreaming by Dave Matthews Band. And I was like, what is this? And so I listened to it and I fell in love. Dave Matthews Band is a big jam band where I just feel like they'll sing a song and then just like riff on it for a while. And this is one of those songs that I just, again, it stuck with me for a very long time. I could turn it on and listen to it any old time. And that is the song Dancing Nancies by the Dave Matthews Band. Are you familiar with this one?
I'm not, but I'm not familiar with the Dave Matthews Band pretty much at all.
Well, the only thing you really need to know about the Dave Matthews Band is that they dumped all the poop on their tour bus onto a boat that was passing under the bridge that they dumped it off of.
Okay.
I just think that's a funny story.
Okay.
It's like their tour bus needed to, rather than, you know, removing the waste in the proper ways, dumped it off the edge of a bridge as a tour boat was coming under the bridge.
Oh, I do love that. I was hoping you were going to say like on like a MAGA party or something.
No, this was before those things existed.
Okay. I mean, on those libs. Mad about
that on this podcast.
Huh?
I said we would be mad about that on this podcast.
Yeah, we hope it happened on the libs.
Yeah. Those liberal tears.
Yeah.
That's what I love. But no, Dancing Nancies is a wonderful song. The speaker, I suppose Dave, his real fans call him Dave. Dave is thinking about his life, the things that have brought him to this point. Just like, could I have been anybody else? I'm who I am. Is that who I'm supposed to be? There's all these possibilities of who I could have been, but I am myself. And so I guess we'll just go with it. And I just think it's probably a little more poignant than that, what I just said. But it's just start to finish, really fun song. It has some interesting music going on. It's certainly not one of the bigger hits from that album, but he did make an acoustic version of it in their like re-release of the album in like a couple years ago. It's not as good as the original, but it's still pretty good.
Okay. I think of acoustics when I think of Dave Matthews, but
yeah, I mean, there's he has the acoustic version that's like just the guitar. The real version has like violins and all the other instruments.
Yeah. Yes, this love you've had for Dave Matthews, I've never explored them either.
A little baby.
Maybe one day
on that album. But I'm a big fan.
I didn't know that. I didn't know it was going to be. Is if I asked you which of these was your favorite song of all time, which one would you pick?
Oh gosh, I don't know. That's why I didn't order them.
If you could only pick one, and then you knew that it was going to be played for the person to come after you, and they were going to rate it.
September, probably.
It's a crowd pleaser. I've seen that a few times on that this TikTok channel.
Maybe There She Goes, My Beautiful World.
Ooh. They wouldn't know it, so they would rate it poorly, but...
The fools. But I weren't much of a poet, so...
Okay, my number one, the song that I am pretty sure it could change from moment to moment, but I think if you asked me most of the time what my favorite song of all time was, I would tell you, or if I was going to bust out a song to play for, like... someone who doesn't like music, I'm like, but have you heard this? It is not anything obscure or anything like that. I think it'd be Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
Yeah.
I love that song. I love the energy it brings. I'm a big Queen fan. It's funny, one day I was working in Barnes & Noble right around the time Bohemian Rhapsody came out. Not the song, the
movie. Yeah.
The movie.
You were working at Hastings in the 70s?
I was working at Barnes & Noble.
In the 70s.
And a girl was walking around. I was like, hey, nice Queen shirt. And she went, oh, thanks. I've been a fan for a long time. Not just, you know, since the movie came out. And I was like, you don't have to justify being a fan of Queen. Like, it's not like... It's not like a special thing.
Yeah, it's not like no one's impressed.
Like Freddie Mercury is one of the greatest vocalists of all time. Oh man, I just blanked on his name. Brian
May.
Brian May, thank you. He's one of the greatest guitarists of all time. Like they're great. They're wonderful. You don't have to. you don't have to do this. But Don't Stop Me Now. I think it has a lot of the weirdness that Queen has, but it also has like. That stadium rock get hyped kind of sound that they were really known for, but then it just like dials up the energy and I love it. There are certain songs like The Pretender actually that just make me want to air band. Mm-hmm. and with Don't Stop Me Now, it's piano. I just want to play that piano that it's got going in there. So I just air piano. I don't know how to play the piano, so for me it looks like clawing at something. But yeah, I just think if you just want to have a good time listening to music, and yeah, you can analyze it, and there's some complexity to it, and it's like really a solid song musically, but you don't have to. You can just vibe.
You just have a good time.
Yeah, you can have a ball. Don't Stop Me Now by Queen. Probably most of the time. My favorite song of all time.
My air piano song is Zach and Sarah by Ben Folds.
That doesn't surprise me.
It's just a good piano, air piano song.
Is it like a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's great. I'll send it to you sometime.
Yeah, Ben Folds is another one I've just never really got into. I think of him as stomp and clap music.
I don't know exactly what that means, but I think I'm offended.
Maybe. There were lots of stomp and clap music in like the early 2010s.
Probably. It doesn't mean I have to like it.
Stomp. Todd in the Shadows, one of my favorite music critics, once said that this Noah Kahan, is that the new guy?
I don't know.
There's a new guy, he was like... he had a song that was like, I dial drunk, I'll die a drunk, I'll die for you.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Which is a great lyric. Dial drunk and die a drunk, like contrasting each other. It's a miracle that hadn't been done before. But anyway, he's like, it's hat music, right? Like, I feel like this guy should wear a hat.
just you wear a hat.
He was praising the song. I haven't really given it much of a listen, but
yeah, I'm completely unfamiliar.
But yeah, when you say Ben Folds, I'm like, yeah, that's, it's like stomp clap music. Like I don't know. I have not given Ben Folds much of a shot. So
I'll send you this one.
Okay.
But I think that's it for this. We've done it. Had a really nice time.
We want to hear from you. What are your favorite songs of all time?
Yes, you can reach out to us, like we said, on Blue Sky Comics Palooza at bsky.social or hotcomicpulls@gmail.com.
Yeah, I personally would love to know your take on U2 as well, just because this like hatred of U2 is something I don't understand. If you don't like Bono as a person, I get that. Bono is kind of annoying sometimes.
Yeah, aren't we all?
But anyway,
we don't have the reach of Bono, though, to annoy quite so many people.
Agreed.
All right, but we're done with that. So I guess it is time for Uncle's One More Thing.
One more thing.
Then you're up first.
I'm not really engaging in a ton new. I've listened to Joshua Tree several times. That's a great, great album. I'll give him U2. I've been in the U2 kick lately. But I think what I'm going to go with, and I'm only 5 episodes in, so this is going to be a tentative one more. Again, a tentative one more thing. I reviewed Infinity Castle last week, right?
You did.
Okay. I'm just making sure I didn't need to do that one. But I'm only 5 episodes in. An anime called 86. And I'm loving it. It's pretty incredible. It's 24 episodes total. I haven't gotten to the end. I don't know if it ends well. But it is a really maybe kind of basic concept, but done extremely well. It is a war drama mech show. But the mechs kind of are like four-legged spiders with giant cannons on them. So they're not like the standard like humanoid mechs.
Mm-hmm. Sign me up.
Yeah, it's very like, it's like very gritty kind of like war mechs. But the whole premise of the show is that there's this city and it is like paradise. But it's kind of weird because everyone has silver hair and silver eyes. And they're talking about that they won a war against some empire like a bunch of years ago. And yeah, they won a war against an empire a bunch of years ago. But that empire built a whole bunch of like autonomous drones to fight the war for them. And they are still active, even though the emperor was defeated. So they stay safe in these walls where the drones can't get to. And they have their own autonomous drones out that are defending the city from this, the remnants of this empire. And they boast, like, because of these autonomous drones, we have had no human casualties in years. So, you know, they're holding up safety. But it turns out, not so autonomous. The drones are piloted by people, but they are people without silver eyes and silver hair. And thus the government of the city does not consider them human. Huh. They call them biological processors, and they send them out to fight and die. And they live terrible lives where most people don't even make it a year into service. And the main character is kind of an idealist who her dad was really high up in the military, and she did really well in the military, and her uncle is like the head of the military. So she could basically do anything. She could have an easy life, but she chooses to be kind of the person, the eye in the sky. Every unit has an eye in the sky that tells the biological processors like where the enemy is, and like they have the maps because they don't even want the people. They're called the 86. They're the 86th district that doesn't officially exist. So they're not people in it. They tell the 86 like they don't even want them to have maps, because they don't want to like get that much power. So like the eye in the sky people, they're called overseers, and they have to like tell them where to go and what to do. And this girl is kind of an idealist, And she has been kicked out of most things in the military because she tells, like early on, she's like helping with a lecture in one of the academy classes. And she's up like, you've been lied to. There are people in these. And yes, they don't have silver eyes and silver hair, but they're people. And she gets in a lot of trouble for that. But no one really, but all, even all the students are like, well, then they're not people. Like they're so convinced of their own superiority that they don't even care. But she is championing their plight. But the show does a lot really interesting with that. Like pretty early on, we learned that her dad was going to visit a group of 86, because he believed in their like betterment and he died. And the 86, like she expects like the 86 to like be very, open and accepting of that. But instead they kind of hate it because he was so arrogant. He didn't think the war could touch him.
Hmm.
Like to him, he was still so far above them because he thought he could come to the battlefield and not die when most people trained to do it their whole lives don't make it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So like to them, they're like, yeah, he's just another, they call him white pigs. And they're like, it's just another white pig who thought he was above the war until he got here. And like, I don't know. It really meshes with the complexity of that. Like she's trying to become friends with the 86 unit that she's assigned to, but they're like, no, we're always going to hate you. Like, sure, we'll talk to you and I'm glad you're being nice to us, but like you're in those walls and we hate you. Like,
sorry, princess.
And where I'm getting, we're learning that there's a lot more going on in the battlefield than we were aware of. Like the people in the city are sure that the drones are going to shut down in 2 years and then they'll be safe forever. But the drones are, there's more drones coming and no one really knows how. And they seem to like be speaking with the voices of dead soldiers. And there's just a lot, we're learning that there's a lot more going on, but the city doesn't want to see that. Or at least that's what it seems like right now. So a war that they think they are insulated from, in my opinion, looks like it is about to become a war that they don't know how to fight. But yeah, it's pretty terrific so far. If you like war is hell dramas, which I do, my favorite, I love mecha anime. But even something like, it reminds me a lot of like a Final Fantasy Tactics in a way of just like the way the story is told.
Mm-hmm. The class issues.
Man, 86. I'm loving it. I'm not, again, I'm probably, if I was guessing, like 7 episodes in or so. But so far, it's fantastic.
All right. My one more thing is a game. I set the preamble up a long time ago. Feels like a lifetime ago at this point. But I've been playing a little game that I feel like I've owned for a long time and never really played much past the tutorial. So I just picked it up as I'm in between things right now. And this is called Bastion. Did you ever play Bastion back in the day?
I think I own it.
Mm-hmm. I was in the same boat. It's from Supergiant Games, who did Transistor and then a little game called Hades, and one that's coming out very soon called Hades 2. And it's interesting because I can definitely see the DNA of Hades in Bastion. But it's obviously very different. It's not a roguelike or roguelite, whatever, however you'd make that distinction. It's not one of those, but it is very visually similar, where it's that isometric view. You're the character going through, you have different weapons. As you are essentially rebuilding this bastion, there was something called the Calamity that wiped out most all of the world. You're like one of the lone survivors. The character is just called the Kid. And there's like dynamic narration from this other character throughout the game, which is always interesting because it's like sometimes if you're like early on, if you're like, I have my weapon, I'm just going to smash and destroy the environment. The narrator will just be like, and then the Kid just raged for a while. Or it just says all these things and it's kind of narrating the game as you do stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun. But you're like going out in the world and getting pieces that are building up the bastion, kind of like the last safe haven of humanity. Not that there's only 2 people left that you know of. And so you're just kind of like building this up, and it just gives you different game mechanics that you unlock as you go on. But it's like, it's really fun. It's pretty short. I looked it up, and I think it takes about 6 hours to beat. And I'm played it for like about 2 hours. Like if you have a weekend with some time, you can knock it out. And it's usually, I feel like I often see it on sale. You can probably get it for just a few dollars.
Yeah, I feel like this was one of those early 2010s, like proof of concept to what indie games could be kind of.
Yeah, I would say it. I'd probably mention it in the same breath as like a Castle Crashers or I can't think of any other indie games. You know, where it's just like it was just different then. Like if you made it, if you made a game like this today, you never hear of it. But back then when it came out, it was like there was just room. There was room in the market for something like this to exist, and for Supergiant Games to grow and become what it is today. But it's like Hades wouldn't exist if Bastion didn't exist. But it's fun. It's fun to play around. It's not too deep. It's not too hard. It's just enjoyable to go around, and you just have all sorts of different weapons, and you can build different loadouts. And that it's enjoyable. It's engaging. It's fun.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know, in this time, I don't know why I'm thinking like Terraria. I'm thinking like, even like Undertale.
Undertale's only 10 years ago, which is crazy.
Yeah, but that's
only 2015.
Yeah, that's 2015. That's not, maybe Binding of Isaac. But yeah, I feel like it was a precursor to the current indie game scene.
It's crazy because Hollow Knight was just 2017?
Yeah.
It came out.
Yeah, it was late 2010s.
But still, like in that same decade, that's just nuts. Super Meat Boy, even Minecraft at the beginning.
2007 Early Access, probably 2010 launch, right?
Yeah, I remember it being in college and people talking about it, like alpha stage, even.
Yeah, the first time I ever played it was the last time I went to the town that I graduated. So it had to be 2007, 2008. But it was like, it was like an early edition.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts, like that time, which doesn't feel like that long ago.
Yeah, in hindsight, I feel like it seems much more like a frontier.
But like the game market is just so different now.
Maybe not better.
No, certainly not better.
I've never played it. I've been aware of it for forever.
Wow. Yeah. I would recommend it. Again, it's not too long. I feel like the levels are pretty short overall, and it does some just very interesting things narrative wise, but it's not like beefy. Trails in the Sky, first chapter, this is not.
Well, that one's pretty short comparatively.
I think that the remake is longer.
I kind of hope it is.
At least that's what I
I'm just trying to fly through Persona 3 Reload. I'm in late October at this point. I think I'm on October 31st, actually. Happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday to you.
But I'm just trying to get through it so I can... I think Digimon Story Time Stranger is going to be my first of the three.
I've heard that's really good and fun.
Yeah, there's the demo, but I don't know if I need the demo.
Yeah, I downloaded the Sky demo just for something to do. Not that I'm like, I'm going to get this.
You should download the Time Stranger demo.
I looked on Switch and I didn't see it. Maybe I'll check again.
Oh, yeah, Time Stranger is not confirmed for Switch 2 yet.
That's the problem.
Yeah. They were even asked about it recently, and they're like, I'm sure it will come eventually.
It better. All right. Well, we've done it yet again. Another episode. Come and gone.
Another come and gone.
Like
and
the days.
I still haven't found what I've been looking for.
No. Did you hear that Days of Our Lives had a reference to Xenoblade Chronicles?
No.
Yeah. Like a week or two ago. A character was just like, I'm playing Xenoblade.
Oh, it wasn't even like a veiled reference.
No, it was like literally like they needed a video game to say, and that's the game that they said. I'm just like, okay, this is our moment. We've made it.
We've made it.
I guess we're mainstream now.
Just tell us Monolith Soft still exists as its own entity, please. We're desperate to know.
They have to.
Man, they've been so radio silent since the DLC for Chronicles 3.
Did they not do X remake?
No. Someone else remastered it.
Oh.
Who was that?
I don't know. I never finished it.
Did you start it?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
I should finish it.
I was about to say, maybe that's what you should be playing right now.
I'm just not in the mood.
I get it. I've been a mood gamer lately, too.
I'll come back around. But as I said, we've done it. We finished the episode. And now we're in that like post-episode languishing before we sign off. So I'm just going to sign us off. You have been listening to Comics Palooza. We are the only comic book show that's always hot to go. It's true.
You normally don't say that.
I normally don't. I'm trying some new things out. But you will find us here next week at the same turtle time and the same bat channel.